fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mark Morano Show, TNT Radio. We have a full slate for you today. This is just overwhelming. What's happening in the world today all at once? I mean, the last 2 years have been very difficult to keep up. And then there's these little times in moments in time when everything just seems to accelerate, whether it's the inflation at home, the gas prices, the baby food shortages, Ireland giving up their own domestic agriculture for some, you know, global world order, which is essentially echoing the words of Vladimir Lenin in Tsarist Russia. You know, the worse, the better. That seems to be the motto right now. Deroy Murdoch did some research, the National Review columnist. What a great phrase to find from the past. The worse, the better is how revolutionaries describe chaos. And it's a perfect description for what the Great Reset is all about and what the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and Build Back Better and what we're seeing in the Biden administration and what we saw with all the COVID, what we're seeing with the WHO pandemic. The worse, the better. The more chaos, the more the intellectual administrative elite in charge get to take over everything. So this week here, and coming at you, recording this program on live May 21st, 2022, U.S. time, this is an incredible week. First of all, I wanted to start off. First of all, I spoke this week at a Ritz-Carlton. Actually, I spoke at an event with Steve Moore and Grover Norquist, and it was about the climate agenda. What is an update to the climate agenda to a lot of influential conservatives? And I did my PowerPoint. And what I like to do when I present to an audience, now this is an audience very familiar with the climate agenda. They're all familiar with Al Gore, AOC, Green New Deal. They know all about the UN Paris Agreement. So I don't just come up there and I don't talk, 97% in the hottest year and CO2 not being the control knob. I don't go into all how they built the consensus. I focused on one aspect of this debate. And I think many in this audience had never heard this. And many people may have heard it, but didn't realize the extent. In their own words, meaning the establishment, meaning academia, meaning government reports, meaning international agency reports, meaning national figures and the scientific journals, I laid out the case that COVID has now overtaken climate as the permanent, and I should say, when I say permanent, I mean it's for as long as the eye can see, the decade plus issue, and that climate is merely a subset, if you will, of public health and COVID. In other words, more climate change leads to unchecked COVID, which leads to you being a grandma killer if you don't support the Green New Deal. But what I like to do is I put in mainstream sources. Now, I kept saying as I was doing this, I was citing British Medical Journal, hundreds of medical journals, Harvard University, the International Energy Agency, Leeds University, UK-funded government reports, NBC News, and I was going to Washington Post, and I was showing them point by point. These are their words. I have UN officials saying the only way we can reach the UN Paris Agreement in 2013, they said this, is to lock down the global economy. I have the Washington Post talking about we need 2 weeks to flatten the coronavirus curve. We need 2 weeks to flatten the climate curve. I had the Harvard School of Medicine basically saying that more COVID will lead to, I'm sorry, more climate, unchecked climate change leads to more COVID. I went through all the lockdown reports, how major journals want to take away private car ownership. And here's, I just want to say this again, because this is the key. It's one thing to just have a right-wing conspiracy figure spewing a bunch of stuff. But I show them the sources. I show them the actual headline. I show them the actual quotes and the articles. And I talk to them about it and I give them analysis. That, I think, is the key. When I talk about China being one of the, trying to do an agricultural land monopoly by buying up farmland in the U.S., I cite Politico, which is a organ of the establishment, politically left establishment newspaper. I have their quotes. I have their headlines. When I cite that Bill Gates is now, by the way, that land monopoly of China is being challenged. So don't worry. There's always competition. The competition is Bill Gates. Bill Gates is now the single largest farm owner in America. And then people, where'd you get that? NBC News. So I show the NBC News slide. I show the NBC News quote. I could have shown NBC News video segment clip of it. This is what's so shocking is, and NBC News actually says it's not Bill Gates out there in the overall. So I asked a simple question. Well, what is Bill Gates' agenda? Why does Bill Gates want to be the single largest farm owner in America? Aha, Bill Gates is against meat eating. Bill Gates supports, he has a whole business and industry pushing the fake meat processed vegetable burgers on the public. So the question then comes, wouldn't he be in a better position to position his business and push his ideology if he were the single largest farm owner? Answer is absolutely yes. And then I go into the World Economic Forum and I talk about the insect eating. So by the end of it, what I'm trying to convey to them is none of this is a conspiracy. And I even told a group when I spoke in Canada last month, I spoke digitally because I didn't get the Wuhan death vaccine. I told them, I go, since 2019, the greatest change I've seen in the last 2 years is just the openness by which the power structure, academic, media, corporate, and government administrative state are just willing to just say out loud what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and be damned anyone who has any issue with it whatsoever. So that was a great event I went to. And I think it's just, it's an amazing thing when people's eyes open that they think like, oh, we're going to go back to climate, you know, COVID's over. First of all, they're never giving up public health COVID viruses. And I'll get into, by the way, we're going to talk about monkeypox today. We're going to talk about Bill Gates and his new germ effort. We're going to talk about the WHO's pandemic treaty. And we're going to talk about the disinformation board, which is just, you know, creepy and a lot of fun to talk about as well. And I got some great singing clips for you here to listen to on that as well. But it's just, it's an amazing convergence. I don't, you know, I'm 53 years old and I don't remember in my lifetime. Yeah, I know everyone likes to think their lifetime is unique and everything that happens in their lifetime is unprecedented and, you know, we are special and blah, blah, blah. But I think you objectively, historically, since COVID, and then accelerating with the disaster of everything that's occurred since Biden was sworn in terms of economically spending, inflation, debt, supply chain, and then, of course, the Ukraine invasion, and then all the scariest thing isn't all of that. It's the proposed solutions. And again, I go back to Vladimir Lenin, the worse, the better, because the more chaos, the more we can collapse our current system, the better that these plans of things like the Great Reset, the New World Order, the Agenda 2030, the new biodiversity, they're just moving in and they're going after sovereignty, individual property rights, bodily autonomy, and they're going after every aspect of human endeavor to regulate, manage, and control. If you look back at the great leap forward in Mao and his farming practices in China and the millions that it killed, essentially, they're imposing that kind of a system, or Stalin in the 1930s, the same thing, and the Ukrainian farmers and Lysenkoism and that kind of science. They're imposing this now on a global level, and we're getting the same results that we got under Stalin and under Mao, which is supply chain, famines, starvation, economic hardship, a return to a virtual serfdom. This is the world in which we face. It's a very, you know, complex world. And then, of course, you have the ESG. And I'll probably end up doing at least half a show or almost a whole show just on ESG so people can understand. But environment social governance is a huge thing. And the genius of environment social governance, which is being pushed by the United Nations, by the Biden administration, by corporate America, by the climate activists, is you don't need no stinking vote of Congress, because these are private companies, just like Facebook and Twitter are private companies. They can do what they want. You're not a conservative. You want to regulate a private company. Big tech censorship is government censorship. When the government gives you a list of people to ban and you ban it, and then within a week, you're not a private company. That's called corporate government collusion. And this is the most deadly threat. Ronald Reagan warned of the dangers of big government. Well, had he been aware and had he been around today, he'd be warning of the dangers of the collusion of big government and corporate America. And by the way, the biggest joke of the week, Larry Hogan, Republican governor of Maryland, absolute administrative ideological joke, a man who went along with lockdowns, mask mandates, never met a mainstream media he didn't like to pander to. He's billing himself as the new Reagan model conservative, which is just shocking. But, you know, that's politics and who cares. And if you live in Maryland, you deserve Larry Hogan. But anyway, okay, let's get started here. I wanted to do some clips here. The disinformation board, and we're going to get to the WHO pandemic treaty. I'll probably spend most of my time on the, excuse me, the WHO pandemic treaty, because that's the greatest threat. But I wanted to have a little fun here. Nina Jankowicz, the Department of Homeland Security in the United States, the Disinformation Governance Board, or i.e. Orwell's Ministry of Truth, has now been officially disbanded, shut down. The word on the street is she was such an embarrassment that the deep state looked for a way out, and they basically blamed misinformation for killing the misinformation board, or disinformation. And by the way, misinformation is allegedly described as wrong information. Disinformation is wrong information knowingly spreading with the intent of spreading wrong information for a purpose. That's disinformation, whereas misinformation is just wrong information. So what happened was, we think she was basically let loose, and it was blamed on the disinformation board's failure was blamed on disinformation, which is odd because that was the reason they set it up. But here's Nina Jankowicz blaming that her, saying that her personal life was destroyed, and blaming this on Republicans, and saying it's a national security threat that she no longer has a job fighting disinformation.
I have to ask you, a number of people in the Republican Party came after you for some tweets from the past, saying that they were too political. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I have to say that there are 250,000 employees at the Department of Homeland Security. I was one of them. We all have different political inclinations, and we all checked them at the door. As a political appointee, I was also subject to the Hatch Act, which limits my political activity, and that's something I took extremely seriously.
Yeah, what she's trying to claim here is, yes, she's a, you know, wacky disinformation specialist, meaning she spews disinformation herself, everything about from Donald Trump, all about the media, COVID. She's the walking definition of misinformation and disinformation. And there's also something called malinformation, which I don't even know what that means. And frankly, don't even want to look up the federal definition of it. But she's basically saying she checks all of these opinions at the door, and that's the end of it. And of course, that is one thing that's nonsense, but her whole job would have been going after the political
National
opinions.
Defense Authorization Act. And I've been a Republican and Democratic witness in Congress. So I would point to those parts of my CV and my resume, and not these tweets and parts of my personal life that have been picked on in this childish game in order to endanger our national security. That's what's going on here.
So she says it's endangering our national security because she no longer has a job monitoring and fighting and silencing disinformation and misinformation. And she's talking about these attacks on her personal life. She's a public figure who put herself out there as the guru, as the decider, as the dictator of what is going to be misinformation, disinformation. And the idea that she's only one of 250,000 employees. This is an organization, Department of Homeland Security, that is armed with law enforcement, with executive powers, and with weapons. Men with guns, women with guns run this agency. The fact that she was going to be a special high-profile board set up to determine what's mis and what's disinformation, allegedly down the road, who knows, with subpoena power and the ability to, you know, seize bank accounts at some point, that's all where this was headed. That's all what they're looking at. And the future, we've already seen it happening in Canada with Justin Trudeau. We're seeing it happen in countries around the world, even some African nations, European nations, where if you don't get a vaccine or you don't comply with lockdown, they will shut down your banking cards and Visa and MasterCard. We already know Visa and MasterCard are joining up with, MasterCard is joining up with the United Nations in order to do a credit card that monitors your carbon footprint and cuts off your spending when you hit your carbon footprint max. It's voluntary right now, but how long till that's voluntary? So that's monitoring your behavior. Then they're going to monitor your speech. And this is what Nina Jankowicz, it just, of course, rings hollow when she's, you know, when she's out there crying poor, you know, crying upset on this. But so she's claiming national security threat. I wanted to play one other clip here. One second. There's a clip that someone did a spoof of her singing the singing the Mary Poppins song. But here she is, just another clip of Nina Jankowicz arguing that it's liberals and minorities who are being silenced.
This allegation that there is anti-conservative bias on the platforms, even though there has been study after study proving, in fact, that often it's liberal voices that are being silenced, particularly minority voices on social medias.
Now, that's just on the face of it. I don't know what studies, and it's funny. People are like, there's a study on that. You know, there's studies claiming that the 1970s ice age, global cooling period never happened, that everything you saw, the CIA reports, professors writing Nixon, peer-reviewed studies, major media outlets, prominent scientists, data, papers talking about the theory of the coming ice age and the man-made global cooling, never happened. All they do is a peer-reviewed study claiming it, and it's done. She's claiming there's nothing. Now, I know from my own experience from just on Twitter, I would say about a dozen prominent people I followed, including people like Naomi Wolf and Michael Senger, from on COVID issues, were just eventually just deleted and thrown off the platform. Tony Heller on the climate issue and many, many others. I'm not aware of any liberals who were thrown off. The only liberals who might or on the left are ones who were red-pilled because of COVID. And Naomi Wolf would be considered a liberal. So I guess if she was banned from Twitter, they'd say, well, she was a former advisor to Clinton Gore, so there's our proof that, you know, it's not just conservatives being facing restrictions. No, it's when a liberal like Bill Maher, Naomi Wolf, Jimmy Dore, Russell Brand, I'm using the word liberal loosely, of the left, progressive, any of them say anything counter to the narrative, they get banned. So I guess you could say, hey, if they get banned or strikes on them, then hey, they're part of the left. So therefore, it's not just conservatives. No, when liberals talk like conservatives, they get banned. So I'm gonna play the spoof that someone did. I'll play her singing Mary Poppins in the spoof, and then we're gonna get on. We're gonna talk monkeypox, the pandemic treaty. But it's time for a break. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Stay tuned. Promise you, we're gonna lay out. If you're not scared by the end of this program, if you're not ready to gouge your eyes out and give up, then I've failed in my mission. But I'm joking, of course. There's a way to fight back, but first you have to educate yourself on what we're doing. So this is the Mark Morano Show, TNT Radio. We'll be right back after this message.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
There is a special place in South Dakota. A place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org today.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
This is the Mark Morano Show on today's news talk. TNT.
Welcome back. The Mark Morano Show here. Now, we were talking about Nina Jankowicz, and we were talking about the Disinformation Governance Board. So I just wanted to play you the clip of her singing with Mary Poppins and then play you the spoof, and then we'll move on to other issues. So this is Nina Jankowicz singing.
Bullying is really quite ferocious. It's when a huckster takes some lies and makes them sound precocious by saying them in Congress or a mainstream outlet. So disinformation's origins are slightly less atrocious. It's how you hide a little, hide a little lie. It's how you hide a little, hide a little lie. It's how you hide a little, hide a little lie. When Rudy Giuliani shared that intel from Ukraine, or when TikTok influencers say COVID can cause pain, they're laundering disinfo when we really should take note and not support their lies with our wallet, voice, or vote. Oh, information laundering is really quite ferocious.
Okay, you get the idea. That's Nina Jankowicz. One of the beauties of her, and this is one of the reasons I think she just lost her job. This is just an embarrassment from beginning to end. She believes she has the monopoly on mis and disinformation on everything from COVID, national security. And she was prepared with an agency with subpoena power, guns, and an executive agency of the United States government to head this board, this governance board, high profile. And luckily, she was destroyed, and the whole thing was, you know, collapsed. The agency was destroyed. So this is a lady now singing a counterpoint, which I just thought was funny. Someone's making fun of her singing the opposite.
Everywhere you go, take a look at Australia, locking up aboriginals, just a few more steps to genocide, you know. It's beginning to look a lot like fascism. Most of the world is blind, but it's never going to end this totalitarian trend as long as you comply. You gave your freedom away for protection. They say that's the oldest trick in the book. But the protection of tyrants and corporate giants is not as safe as it looks. And Google, Facebook, YouTube are now burning all the books. It's beginning to look a lot like fascism.
All right. And that lady, and I don't know who did it. It was a tweet from Timothy Rue. And it just, I thought it was very well worded, and it was in response to Nina Jankowicz. But one of the things she said, which is very important, you don't have to comply. And that, as I've mentioned before, everything I was joking earlier about gouging your eyes out and being in despair, the greatest thing we can do is resist at every level, local, state, city, national, you know, region, on every level, from your school board to your town council, to your county, to your city. Because if you resist on even the small things, the masks, social distancing, you name it, you've got to resist. You've got to change the narrative. You cannot give in and let them know that you're, you know, not playing ball. On the same token, now, we're going to start talking here in a moment about the pandemic treaty. But I found this very interesting. Before we get in, excuse me, to the underlings of why they want a pandemic treaty, and the reason why is they want everything to be permanently implemented. Anthony Fauci was asked at a House hearing in the past week, when do you think the COVID emergency will ever end? And he actually says, I don't think we're going to see a sudden one day there'll be a declaration that the pandemic is over. Now, interestingly enough, according to WebMD, a report here, the U.S. has now extended the COVID public health emergency. This was on May 17th, a few days ago. Federal health officials will extend the COVID-19 public emergency past mid-July, which will continue pandemic-era policies as coronavirus cases increase again. The Department of Homeland Security has renewed the emergency order. So this was supposed to be 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And I go back, and into my book, The Great Reset, a lot of you may not want to hear this, I do gentle critique of President Donald Trump, because this happened under his watch. I call it the greatest blunder in perhaps 50 plus years, the greatest single blunder in 50 plus years of any president. And I mean the greatest single blunder. And I defy you to give me other blunders. There might be others that rank up there, but I don't know that there's anything as consequential, as long lasting, and as life altering between citizen and his state. Of allowing this COVID emergency declaration, which then gave powers to all the, you know, the governors and mayors and turned them into just dictators literally overnight. And so that is one of the problems. So here's now Anthony Fauci this week in Congress being asked by Congressman Moulinaire, when is this COVID emergency going to end?
No longer call the current COVID public health emergency a pandemic. Are there criteria? Are there benchmarks? What kind of a process will we go through to make that determination?
No, there is really no firm, widely acceptable definition. When one talks about pandemic, you talk about a highly transmissible infection that is essentially widely distributed throughout the globe. I've spoken about this recently. When you're in the acute fulminant stage of pandemic, the way we were in the United States, just a few months ago, you might remember, we had 900,000 cases a day, tens of thousands of hospitalizations, and we were averaging 3,000 deaths.
All right, I'll stop it there. But he said there's literally no criteria by which to end this public declaration. And now he's going on talking about case counts and even hospitalization. At this point, we know that hospitalization didn't mean you were hospitalized with COVID. I mean, you could go in with a gunshot, a car accident, and if you tested positive for the Omicron flu version, mild cold version of COVID, that you were then hospitalized for COVID. So we know it's all statistics. There's no firm definition. These are the words of Anthony Fauci. And we know we've just extended this COVID emergency. Now, a lot of this emergency, beside from government power grab, is a government money grab, because federal government is giving people, cities like Los Angeles, New York, and governors have been just getting lavish with federal money for these COVID declarations. And they're not only they're not only getting rid of their budget deficits, but they have now lavish money to spend however they want, ensure their reelection, you know, and ensure political patronage to all of their allies and supporters. I mean, this is just public health corruption 101, government manipulation of a public health scare. So the reason I start out talking about the WHO pandemic treaty with this is there's no definition of declaring this. Now we have the World Health Organization coming out and trying to essentially establish a pandemic treaty from the World Health. They're meeting in the next week to 2 weeks. And they're going to be hashing this out. It's going to be an addition. It's going to be an amendment or revised from a treaty from, I think, 2005, 15 years ago. And essentially what they're going to do is they're going to empower people like Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization. You have to understand the World Health Organization is essentially a tool of China. Tedros was a man chosen by China, a puppet of China. Anthony Fauci considers him a great friend. Bill Gates has great respect for him. He's the former Ethiopian public health minister, covered up a cholera outbreak. He's literally very comfortable with authoritarian regimes, authoritarian power grabs, coming from Ethiopia. Tedros tried to pick Robert Mugabe as his goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization. That was too much for even academia and mainstream America. Now, Robert Mugabe is known as one of the famous racists in the world who seized white farm owner to essentially do retribution and reparations for slavery and discrimination, and just the exact opposite way you would ever want to move a country forward and heal it. Brutal dictator, literally wanted him to be the goodwill ambassador. And that, of course, was pretty immediately, actually. And even BBC and others covered it. That idea was just booted out quickly. But it gives you an idea where they are. So the single largest donor next to the United States government to the World Health Organization is, drum roll please, Bill Gates. Bill Gates, he's the largest donor, the Bill Gates Foundation, the largest donor to the world, second largest donor next to the United States government. He's the first donor. In other words, the United States government is the biggest, then Bill Gates. So Bill Gates essentially runs that in connection with China. This is what we're facing. And that what they want to do, this pandemic treaty is modeled after the UN IPCC. And I will say one thing. The UN IPCC is literally 100 times less scary, the pandemic treaty of the UN Paris Agreement is 100 times less scary than anything the World Health could do, for one reason. People actually are afraid of a virus. Countries, people, leaders, no one was ever afraid of climate. It was all nonsense from beginning to end. China's not afraid. Joe Biden was never afraid. President Obama was never afraid. Al Gore isn't afraid. Boris Johnson isn't afraid. It's a tool for public power. It's a tool to try to impose on the public. All these corporate CEOs talking about, guys on the United Airlines flight last week, and they have this little video that plays when you sit down, and the CEO of United is talking about how they're going green and net zero, and how they don't give a. This is all a public relations / tool. So that's why when they say modeled after that, the UN Paris Agreement is laughable in terms of power and threat compared to a pandemic treaty. Why? Because viruses scare the hell out of people. They scare the hell out of people at a base level, cuts across parties, ideologies, any kind of other affiliation, class, wealth, status, you name it. And so if you can exploit this primal fear in a person of death, hospitalization, death of a loved one, death of a parent, death of a child, permanent health disability. If you can exploit that concept and say, we're going to do this treaty to keep everyone safe and have rapid response, that is 100 times more frightening and impactful than anything climate related. And that is what's happening here. The way this is being negotiated, and we don't know how it's all going to flush out in the end, but the way this is being negotiated is you're going to have Tedros, as the World Health Organization leader, be able to just declare on his own a public health emergency. And it doesn't have to be public health. It doesn't have to be your traditional definition of public health, i.e. viruses or other kind of physical illness. It can be misinformation emergency. It can be a gun violence emergency. It can be, who knows? It could be a trans ideology, transgenderism emergency if there's too much discrimination and that World Health is invoking it. Whatever the issue is going to be defined as and as it goes forward. So, and the idea here is it's taking away not just national sovereignty, but your autonomy. The idea what they're looking for is the World Health Organization to just declare some kind of public health emergency, and they'll have the power to censor global information. In these simulations that John Hopkins and World Economic Forum and other universities have done, they talked about openly shutting down the internet globally in order to prevent misinformation during a public health crisis. This is the scary stuff that we're facing with this kind of a treaty. And they can declare instant lockdowns. They can declare massive travel banning and restrictions. They can declare mask mandates, vaccine passports. And I'm sure they want to get their hands on banking, and they want to withdraw and punish people, again, using Justin Trudeau as the model. Stories that I'm hearing, I talked to a Canadian recently, When the truckers were finally leaving Ottawa, the capital city, or Ottawa, however you say it, in Canada, there was someone wanted to do like a barbecue for them. Well, the man who hosted a barbecue actually had his banking shut down because he was aiding and dissenting traitors and treasonous territory people who were against the state and enemy of the state, if you will. But let me give you a little bit more background on this treaty. I became aware of this pandemic treaty. I want to say it was last December. Fully aware. The Washington Post, again, an organ of the establishment, and this goes with my communication philosophy. When you have a choice to present information that people aren't going to necessarily believe or think you're exaggerating or a conspiracy, there's always use the mainstream organs sourcing. The Washington Post called the UN style WHO pandemic treaty. And I'm trying to get the date here for you. One sec. This was, they called it a radical UN-style pandemic treaty. As Omicron variant alarm spreads, countries mull a radical pandemic treaty. This was actually the Washington Post headline. In I think it was December 1st, 2021. Countries mull a radical pandemic treaty. And I have the article, I have the image of the paper in case they ever change. But even the Washington Post is calling this idea radical. And the gist of it is it may seek to enforce global lockdowns. And according to the Washington Post, an international agreement to prevent and deal with future pandemics, this is important, complete with a, quote, legally binding agreement. Now, the Biden administration is going to be is actually trying to strengthen this. They're adding amendments to give the WHO more executive powers, more authoritarian powers, more enforcement powers. And they don't want to submit this to the Senate. And I guess there was a 2005 treaty that was already essentially supported back when public health wasn't as controversial. And so they're just going to say this is merely not even an amendment, but just a revision, and it doesn't require Senate ratification for the U.S. to sign on to this. But one of the goals that they're trying to do here is essentially rein in any rogue state. If you're Sweden, if you're Ron DeSantis in Florida, Kristi Noem in South Dakota, and you try to dissent, the full force and weight of both international agency and the federal government to enforce compliance with this treaty that we're committing ourselves to with full enforcement by the World Health, they could shut down federal aid. They could stop interstate trucking and travel to that state. They could do all sorts of things to punish that state. They can stop, as we already saw in the case of Florida, they stopped all sorts of early treatments for COVID, sort of as political punishment, because Ron DeSantis in Florida didn't go along with the whole COVID narrative mandates and all that. So that's point number one. So this is modeled after that. Now, at the time, back in December, I issued this statement. This will be a virus version of the UN Paris-style agreements. The pandemic crisis will become permanent like the climate crisis. Now, remember, these two aren't even comparable. The pandemic crisis is 100 times order of magnitude bigger than any climate, because no one cares. You can't scare people with climate. The reason they tried for decades to scare adults, failed, and they ended up going after kids, had much more success with that. And I think I talked about this last week, but even a Gallup poll, which recently out this last month, showed that among environmental issues, climate was dead last, behind clean air, clean water, tree, forestry, species extinction. Dead last among all environmental issues, let alone dead last among all issues. The public, the American public particularly, not only couldn't care, they literally have never cared less about global warming. So when you have people who don't care about it, you're going to have much less success. That's why when you compare a pandemic crisis to a climate crisis, there's just no, there's no comparison, because the viral crisis is going to trump climate every time by many orders of magnitude. So I said, attempts to impose lockdowns for future variants may be internationally imposed instead of national, state, or local. If you don't like your governor, mayor, or school board, you can vote them out. But if a Washington Post described radical WHO pandemic treaty that is legally binding becomes reality, global mandates may be coming your way and local elections will cease to matter, as unelected bureaucrats will be wielding the real power over your life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. This must be stopped now. Once it's set in place, COVID mandates become official, permanent, as elite officials fly around the world to discuss how to further crush freedom, wage war on viruses. Just like the UN climate panel, architect of the treaty will seek more and more power, control, become self-interested lobbying organizations, all while doing squat to prevent or mitigate future viruses. A radical WHO pandemic may be just the ticket for the administrative state to rein in anti-lockdown governors and nations like Ron DeSantis in Sweden. Now, I said this back in 2021, warning of this WHO pandemic treaty. And since that time, it's, of course, no one heeded my warning, but the WHO pandemic treaty is now coming on full strength. They're going to have the power to regulate information. They're going to have the power to regulate every aspect that could be considered public health. And by the way, this is going to affect food supplies. Food is very important. We need to have central control. Remember what I said about Stalin and the Ukraine purges and farming and the Great Leap Forward with Mao and China and the millions dead and the starvation? When you have a central force with an ideology overriding everything, and you have these intellectuals who think that they know best, trying to manage every aspect, this is our future. I mean, we are planning what Mao did in China in 1960 on a grand scale. Now, globally. And most people aren't aware of it. So I'm overdue here for a break. This is Mark Morano, TNT Radio. Come back. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the WHO. I got some great sound bites of it. And then we're going to talk a little bit about monkeypox and a couple other issues. So stay tuned. The Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Former President Donald Trump has made many wise choices in endorsing Republican candidates for the midterm elections. For the primary elections to date, only one of Trump's 59 endorsed candidates has lost, indicating that American voters generally agree with his judgment. Trump's endorsement of Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie last Tuesday is particularly important for this week's primary election to ensure Massie has a resounding win. Although Trump has previously denounced Massie, this turnaround is an endorsement for one of America's most admirable congressmen. Massie has fought hard against medical tyranny, passionately opposing vaccine and mask mandates. He has fought for 9/11 truth. He has opposed the military-industrial complex in profiting from senseless wars. Importantly, he opposes most of his Republican colleagues for meddling in the Ukrainian conflict and risking world war. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
My name is Latoya Adams. I served in the Army. Being with paralyzed veterans of America, they have showed me so much is possible.
I'm Sean Castle, served in the United States Army. I went from laying in a hospital bed dying to being a professional wheelchair basketball player. And it started with that one moment where there's life. I am unstoppable because Paralyzed Veterans of America is by my side.
We are unstoppable.
Learn more at PVA.org.
Challenging the consensus. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. The Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio. We are talking about how we should deal with the next pandemic. And interestingly enough, Bill Gates has a plan very similar to the World Health Organization. Remember, Bill Gates, single largest donor next to the United States government to the World Health Organization. And what Bill Gates is called, it's called GERM, is his acronym for it. But essentially, Bill Gates has one message to the world. If you want to know how to deal with the next pandemic, follow what Australia did. And of course, we all know what Australia did. Australia was one of the most tyrannical COVID response, lockdowns, quarantine camps, militarization, stopping of all sorts of human interaction, Facebook posts, censorship. The most damaging next to Shanghai and what China's doing. So what Bill Gates has been doing, a whole bunch of interviews, lining up his book and trying to get interested and excitement for people to listen to you know, his view of things. And he's talking about this sort of shared collective sacrifice and how we need to you know, give up our individual freedoms in order to essentially, you know, fight the collective and fight the collective threat from the virus. And Bill Gates is a man you have to listen to. As buffoonery as he is, he's a man who has such power. This is a guest that was on, this is actually Laura Ingraham clip, just talking a little bit about Bill Gates' influence.
Let's Microsoft founder Bill Gates tweeting in part, halting funding for the WHO during a world health crisis is as dangerous as it sounds. The world needs them now more than ever. Well, the truth is the group actually needs Gates more than ever. With the U.S. taking a pause, he'll now be their largest active donor. That's right. One out of every 10 bucks that the WHO gets is from the world's second wealthiest man.
There you go. One out of every $10. Remember, that was Donald Trump in 2020. Withdrew us from the World Health in the United States, and then of course, Biden put us back in. So I'm assuming the United States is back up to the biggest donor, but who knows? This is Bill Gates' pet project, the World Health Organization. And this is, you know, this is also the result. This is Tedros, who gave a speech 6 months ago announcing the layout for this pandemic treaty. This is friends, head of the World Health, Tedros.
As you know, there have been several reviews of the global response to the pandemic with many recommendations for strengthening global health security. They all recognize the need for better systems and tools, better financing, including for global public goods such as vaccines, better global governance, and a stronger, empowered, and sustainably financed WHO.
Stronger, empowered, and financed WHO. The most frightening words.
I believe the time is right for an international treaty or other legally binding instrument to provide the framework for a more coherent and coordinated response to future epidemics and pandemics. Whatever new structures or...
So this is Tedros, not very, you know, great with the English language, but laying out openly how he wants a stronger, more powerful, well-funded World Health Organization. And remember, World Health Organization is literally in the pocket of Bill Gates, one of the largest influence here in the pocket of China. If my book coming out on the Great Reset, using some of the great work of Michael Singer, the author, who I tried to get for today's program to come on and talk, but he lays out how the World Health Organization literally said, if you want to know how to handle COVID, this is in January 2020 to February 2020, follow what China did. Do what China did. This is what all of them wanted. So when the World Health Organization, here's to simplify this for you. When they talk about the WHO pandemic treaty, this is basically a Bill Gates China pandemic treaty that's being imposed on you through the essentially the false front or the false flag of false front of a World Health Organization. Now, Bill Gates believes we should be willing to sacrifice our freedoms. And here he is talking. This is a classic interview. This was a recent interview Bill Gates did promoting his book. Listen to this.
Back to this. Should we be willing to accept some restrictions on our liberty?
Absolutely. But, you know, the U.S., that's not our greatest strength. That is making, in some cases, sacrifice for the collective. Now, during a war, we might see that. Certainly, if you go all the way back to World War II, there was incredible sacrifice for the collective goal. The country really did come together around that. Since then, well, you know, after 9/11, to the degree there was anything people could do, you felt that spirit of, okay, what do I have to do to help the people who suffered or to go, you know, make the people who caused the problem pay a price for that. But we're not, we're a society of individual rights, and there's a lot to be said for that. So we're not optimized for pandemics.
Yeah, we're a society for individual rights, says Bill Gates, but we're not optimized for pandemics. So what does he want to do? He wants to use a pandemic scare to crush those individual rights. And then he wants to appeal to a World War II shared sacrifice as essentially a permanent state that we should all be in order to fight. And this goes back again to March 2020. Wear your mask, stay at home, follow the curfew, don't travel, don't congregate with other households, stay in your bubble, as the New Zealand leader said, all because it was a shared sacrifice. Otherwise, you were a grandma killer. You were killing people. You were killing children in Spain. And I document this in my book, Mainstream Sources. Children weren't allowed to leave their home for weeks at a time. Weren't allowed to go outside, weren't allowed to do anything. This was a prison based on viral fears. And this is what the world thinks, well, this is, we did such a great job. We need to permanently recognize this in a treaty. And we now need to send Bill Gates out to talk about how we need collective sacrifice. And it's a World War II style thing, you know, Rosie the Riveter and, you know, loose lips sink ship and everyone's got to comply. We're all in this together. Every cliche imaginable is going to be under force of law through a bureaucratic administrative state that you never voted in and you can't vote out. And your governors and mayors and supervisors and local leaders who fight this are going to be fighting a deep state embedded bureaucracy with the power of these treaties. It's going to come down. And people, I was arguing with someone this week. Oh, well, this is never going to happen. You know, there'll be judges in the Supreme Court or something. It took a federal judge, before we got it, almost two solid years to end the federal mask mandate in the United States. One Trump-appointed judge finally ended it in one day with one decision in a federal district court in Florida. Bingo, gone. 2 years for that to happen. And that's one tiny aspect, you know, mask mandates while flying. Imagine how many tentacles, how many things from no backyard barbecues to you know, curfews to stay-at-home orders to closing of churches to, you know, all the restaurants. How many judges, how long is it going to take to fight the thousand heads of this hydra that's going to spring from a pandemic treaty? So we're in it. We are in it. We are in it deep, deep kimchi. This is just a unbelievable thing. Now, I had the honor of meeting Dr. Robert Malone, one of the inventors, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine. I met him at an event and briefly had a chance to chat with him. That gives me hope when you have people of medical prowess and background and his experience and stature willing to stand up and risk everything. Again, he's tied in with the frontline, you know, the frontline doctors and others who have been fighting this. They're getting deplatformed, canceled, destroyed, all for trying to speak out truthfully about public health, just insanity with which we've been fighting this. Now, there was a Joe Nova, who is an Australian educator and climate skeptic, who I know her from. She had a great comment on this WHO global pandemic. She said, the global pandemic treaty, the WHO, is a $1 trillion business deal, which is a great way to buy it, except it's not a traditional business deal. It's a deal to buy your freedom and bodily autonomy and give it over to international bureaucrats. The WHO is the greatest failed bureaucracy in the world, says Nova. The WHO wants a pandemic treaty like an IPCC committee for viruses. Very apt. And that's what I was talking about in 2021. But I love this line. Joe Nova says it's a, quote, unholy alliance of unelected power mongers with pharmaceutical giants, billionaires with God complexes, military adversaries. What's not to like if you're a communist, a corporation, a psychopath, or a Chinese President Xi? And this is what we're talking about. This has nothing to do with public health. It's a power grab by one of the most corrupt, evil institutions the world faces today, the World Health Organization. And if you go to Climate Depot, my website, by the way, which has now been expanded into these public health issues because climate is now a public health issue, we have a whole series of articles on the problems with the CDC. And by the way, I knew the CDC was a corrupt institution because I followed Michael Fumento, the author, back in the 1990s. When he was going after Anthony Fauci, then long before I was reading about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking about the CDC and Anthony Fauci, Michael Fumento, one of the premier investigative journalists when it comes to these kind of scientific public health issues, was exposing the myth of heterosexual AIDS, where Anthony Fauci was doing a lot of the same rhetoric back then, trying to scare the public and do all sorts of regulation. But of course, they couldn't do anything then because it was a political group that was very sensitive for anyone to try to lock down or quarantine. But they really, he really exposed what the CDC was all about. My own personal experience came with that, on the issue of vaping with the FDA and CDC when teenagers got sick, when they had the vaping lung or whatever they called it. And it turned out it was from black market illegal vapes on the street with marijuana, had nothing to do with a traditional vaping device, and the CDC knew this, but they didn't care. They used it as a power grab to essentially start shutting down the vaping industry. Now, vaping is, using a chemical to aerosolize. It's supposedly many times safer. Some say 90%+ safer than traditional tobacco, but the CDC didn't care one whit about that. They cared about regulatory authority, and they were able to achieve what they wanted. The FDA and CDC, and this is under the Trump administration too, very disappointed again in Trump on a lot of these type of issues. They started doing flavor bans, shut everything down. Anyway, predictable result. Cigarette smoking started skyrocketing as vapes became harder and harder to find. Why does anyone need a flavored vape? Because you need something to get off of traditional tobacco, smoking cigarettes, and you need something to look forward to and that you enjoy. And the CDC, FDA at the time were like, well, you should go to your doctor and get, the prescribed medicines. You can take medicines, you can get a patch, you can do all this stuff or you could actually smoke something vape something that's almost exactly similar flavor, taste, and gives you all that, but without, you don't even have to have the nicotine and you don't have any combustion, which is takes away the greatest cancer threat of it. So it was a politicized organization willing to use any crisis to get power. That included the CDC and the FDA. FDA is an absolute joke when you can have rotating heads of pharmaceutical companies, coming in, like the former FDA director then becomes an executive at Pfizer. And I will say the same thing, here you go. This is my sop, if you will, to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I think Rex Tillerson was a horrible choice for many reasons, mostly ideological. He supported the UN Paris Agreement. But you don't have a former Exxon CEO come into your administration and run it, especially someone who didn't even fit in with the agenda of the Trump administration. So what a disastrous pick that turned out to be for Donald Trump, to have someone essentially undermining him at every step. Luckily, it didn't last very long. But we have a mess here. And going forward, and I think next week I hope to have a guest on to go deep dive into this pandemic treaty, because it is everything. Absolutely everything about your healthcare, your autonomy, your freedom of movement. And then one last thing here before I check out with you today, the monkeypox vaccine, pandemic is here now. We have up to 100 cases, maybe a little bit more of that. The U.S. is now buying millions of doses of monkeypox vaccine. World Health Organization is having a huge meeting on it. There's all sorts of media hysteria now spreading about this. But apparently the U.S. had an outbreak in 2003. It was very similar to this one. But once again, it doesn't matter what's happening now. It's what could, might, may happen based on scary viral models and power-hungry bureaucrats who seize on any bit of chaos or fear, and they go back to Vladimir Lenin, the worse, the better. The more scared we get, the more economic chaos we get, the more supply chain issues we get, the more inflation we get, the more debt, unemployment, depression, you know, public health, drugs, addiction, deferred medication, you name it, the better. Because what can save us from every malady of human existence? Central planning, experts, credentialed people in charge. That is what they're seeking, and they really don't care. They actually, when I say they don't care, they actually have, this is in many ways a feature in order to achieve that. So this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening.